Greetings. This is Tyler McFeeters with your News Gazette, dated Friday, June 13th, 2025. We'll begin with this reading from the front page. Urbana Police. Man who allegedly sent child photos charged. Story by Luke Taylor. Out of Urbana. An Urbana man has been charged with indecent solicitation of a child after he allegedly sent inappropriate photos of himself to a Kentucky 12-year-old. Carson C. Zajdel, 38, was also charged with sexual exploitation of a child for the same exchange. He was arraigned on those charges Thursday and will be held in jail overnight awaiting a hearing on whether he will be detained until trial. Assistant State's Attorney Scott Larson said that the Urbana Police Department began investigating Zajdel after receiving a May 15th cyber tip about an adult in Urbana attempting to entice illicit sexual conversations with a juvenile in Kentucky. Urbana police subpoenaed Snapchat for the phone number and internet protocol address associated with the adult's account, then subpoenaed Comcast for the physical address associated with the IP address. The physical address led police to Zajdel's Urbana residence. Investigators found the Snapchat conversation occurred April 6th. Larson said it included a portion where Zajdel asked the juvenile if he was older, and the juvenile said yay, and Zajdel replied that he was 37. Zajdel then allegedly sent a photo of his genitals, to which the victim said 12 here, but reciprocated by sending an inappropriate photo of himself. The conversation allegedly continued with Zajdel describing sexual acts he wanted to engage in with a juvenile and sending inappropriate videos. Detectives from the Hopkinsville, Kentucky Police Department made contact with the child and confirmed he was using that Snapchat account and is 12 years old. Urbana police were able to compare items in Zajdel's house, like bedsheets, with items visible in some of the Snapchat images and videos he allegedly sent. Zajdel was arrested Wednesday at his home on the 1900 block of North Lincoln Avenue. Both charges Zajdel is facing are Class 4 felonies, with possible penalties of 1 to 3 years imprisonment, followed by 6 months of mandatory supervised release. Father's Day recognition. Being a dad has been slam dunk for these 12. Story by Dave Hinton. Out of Champaign. Metrellian Gibson was given the dream of many young men. He played basketball, and he was good at it, good enough to play professionally. He didn't, however, love it more than family, and that's where he showed his true colors. The Rantoul Township High School graduate left his life as a pro basketball player to be a father. He will be among 12 men who will be honored Sunday, Father's Day, for their fatherhood roles. Herbert Hub Burnett, who is organizing the event, said Gibson, who is known by many as Duck, left pro basketball to come home and take care of his daughter. He's a single parent. Gibson said he was playing semi-pro ball in Kokomo, Indiana. I still had an opportunity to play overseas, but turned it down when his daughter, now 3, was born. I didn't want to be that far away from her, Gibson said. He now works as a supervisor for Champaign-based Go Mad, Make a Difference, a nonprofit entity sponsored by First Followers that teaches a trade to troubled youth from ages 18 to 24. It gives them an opportunity, Gibson said, noting youth can obtain certification in several trades, from carpentry to plumbing to electrical. The featured speaker at the event will be Deshaun Williams, Urbana's new mayor. The ceremony is set for 5 p.m. Sunday at Hood to Hood Mentoring, 1706 Bradley Avenue, Champaign, for their roles as being caring, responsible fathers. Burnett of Hood to Hood said, "These are great fathers, honored for being great fathers." He said, "Black men get a bad rap for not being there for their children, but these men defy that stereotype. They've done a good job taking care of their families and neighborhoods." The honorees hail from across the area, including Champaign, Urbana, Rantoul, and Danville. Also honored will be Vince Williams, Bill Dixon, Reggie Carr, Marcus Reed, Dion Ward, Chris Fondia, David L. Garrard III, Stephance McDonald, Delandis Beck, Tevin White, and P.J. Keaton. And then there's a great photo of them lined up. Two rows, five of them seated in front, five in back. Moving now to the nation and world news. Immigration protests. DHS to continue crackdown. Judge says guard deployment was illegal. Story by Krista Faria, Olga R. Rodriguez, and John Sewer of the Associated Press. Out of Los Angeles. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem pledged Thursday to carry on with the Trump administration's immigration crackdown despite waves of unrest across the U.S., while in Texas, thousands of National Guard troops were on standby in case more trouble breaks out. Hours later, a federal judge issued a temporary restraining order directing Trump to return control of the Guard to California. The order, which takes effect at noon Friday, said the deployment of the Guard was illegal and both violated the 10th Amendment and exceeded his statutory authority. The White House had no immediate comment on the ruling. Governor Gavin Newsom had asked the judge to put an emergency stop to troops helping to carry out immigration raids. The developments unfolded as cities nationwide braced for major demonstration against President Donald Trump over the weekend, and their leaders pleaded with residents to protest peacefully. Noem said the immigration raids that fueled the protests will move forward, saying agents have thousands of targets. "This is only going to continue until we have peace on the streets of Los Angeles," she said during a news conference that was interrupted by shouting from U.S. Senator Alex Padilla, a California Democrat, who was forcibly removed from the event. Newsom has warned that the military intervention is part of a broader effort by Trump to overturn norms at the heart of the nation's democracy. He also said that sending National Guard troops on the raids has further inflamed tensions in Los Angeles, where large and sometimes volatile protests have broken out since the crackdown began nearly a week ago. So far, the protests have been centered mostly in downtown LA near City Hall and a federal detention center where some immigrants are being held. Much of the sprawling city has been spared from the protests. The Trump administration on Wednesday called Newsom's lawsuit a crass political stunt endangering American lives. The court hearing Thursday in San Francisco opened with senior U.S. District Court Judge Charles R. Breyer asking attorneys whether Trump followed the law when he called in the National Guard. "We're talking about the president exercising his authority, and the president is, of course, limited in that authority," Breyer said. "That's the difference between a constitutional government and King George." The judge added, "This country was founded in response to a monarch, and the Constitution is a document of limitations. I'm trying to figure out where the lines are drawn." Demonstrations have picked up across the U.S., with protests emerging in more than a dozen major cities. On Wednesday, police in Seattle used pepper spray to clear out protesters, and officers in Denver used smoke and pepper balls to control a crowd. Police in riot gear, many on horseback, charged at a group of protesters Wednesday night in L.A., just before the start of the second night of the city's downtown curfew. The officers struck some demonstrators with wooden rods and later fired crowd control projectiles, and there were a handful of arrests. Major Karen Bass said during a news conference Thursday that the previous night's arrests were for minor infractions like unlawful assembly and curfew violations. She said the curfew would be in place again, and she hopes continuing it a few more days sends the message that we are serious. Capitol insurrection. Officers sue over January 6th plaque as Dems ramp up pressure against GOP. Story by Justin Papp, out of CQ Roll Call, TNS. And Washington. Two officers who protected the Capitol during the January 6, 2021 attack are returning to the courts to try to compel the installation of an overdue plaque honoring law enforcement. The lawsuit, filed by former Capitol Police Officer Harry Dunn and current Metropolitan Police Officer Daniel Hodges, argues that failure to place the plaque violates the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution. By refusing to follow the law and honor officers as it is required to do, Congress encourages the rewriting of history. It suggests that the officers are not worthy of being recognized because Congress refuses to recognize them, states the lawsuit, which was filed Thursday in the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, and names architect of the Capitol, Thomas Austin, as the defendant. It comes as Democratic lawmakers are ramping up pressure on their Republican colleagues to install the plaque, which, according to statute, should have been up on the west front of the Capitol no later than March 2023. Congress. House OKs request to cut funding for NPR, PBS, foreign aid. Out of Washington, in the AP. The House narrowly voted Thursday to cut about $9.4 billion in spending already approved by Congress as President Donald Trump's administration looks to follow through on work done by the Department of Government Efficiency when it was overseen by Elon Musk. The package targets foreign aid programs and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which provides money for National Public Radio and Public Broadcasting Service, as well as thousands of public radio and television stations around the country. The vote was 214 to 212. Republicans are characterizing the spending as wasteful and unnecessary, but Democrats say the rescissions are hurting the United States' standing in the world and will lead to needless deaths. Cruelty is the point, Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries of New York said of the proposed spending cuts. The Trump administration is employing a tool rarely used in recent years that allows the president to transmit a request to Congress to cancel previously appropriated funds. That triggers a 45-day clock in which the funds are frozen pending congressional action. If Congress fails to act within that period, then the spending stands. Under President Trump's leadership, our taxpayer dollars are no longer being wasted, House Speaker Mike Johnson said after the vote. Instead, they are being directed towards priorities that truly benefit the American people. Air India tragedy. One survives fiery disaster. Boeing 787 crashes shortly after takeoff, killing 241 on board and several on ground. Out of Ahmedabad, India, in the AP. An Air India plane bound for London crashed in a residential area of Ahmedabad shortly after takeoff Thursday, killing 241 people on board, the airline said. One passenger who was thrown from the plane survived. An unknown number of people on the ground were killed in the crash, including medical students in a college hostel when the plane hit the building and burst into flames, said V.T. Chowdhury, a top state police officer in the northwestern city. Most of the bodies have been charred beyond recognition, she said. Indian Home Minister Amit Shah confirmed that he met the sole survivor at the hospital. A doctor said he had examined the survivor, whom he identified as Vishwash Kumar Ramesh. He was disoriented with multiple injuries all over his body, Dr. Daval Gameti said, told the Associated Press, but he seems to be out of danger. Another medic said Ramesh told him that immediately after the plane took off, it began descending and suddenly split in two, throwing him out before a loud explosion. Black smoke billowed from the site where the plane crashed near the airport in Ahmedabad, a city of more than 5 million, and the capital of Gujarat, Prime Minister Narendra Modi's home state. Firefighters doused the smoking wreckage of the plane, which would have been fully loaded with fuel shortly after takeoff, and adjacent multi-story buildings with water. Charred bodies lay on the ground and parts of the fuselage were scattered around the site. Indian Army teams were assisting civil authorities to clear debris and help treat the injured. A video on social media showed the jet slowly descending as if it were landing. As soon as it disappeared from view behind rows of houses, a giant fireball filled the sky. The AP was able to verify the video by matching up the flight path of the plane from the runway with the crash site and the nearby residential area. At the crash site, the tail cone of the aircraft, with damaged stabilizer fins still attached, was lodged near the top of one of the buildings. Others may be buried in debris. In a social media post, Modi called the crash heartbreaking beyond words and said, "My thoughts are with everyone affected." Sambit Patra, a lawmaker from Modi's ruling Bharatiya Janata Party, said Gujarat's former chief minister, Vijay Rupani, was among the dead. Vinyansh Singh, vice president of the Federation of All India Medical Association, said at least 5 students from the medical college were killed on the ground and 50 others were injured. Singh said some of them were in critical condition and many people are feared buried in the debris. Air India confirmed in a statement posted on X that 229 passengers and 12 crew members were killed in the crash. The only survivor was a British national of Indian origin. The flight bound for London Gatwick Airport had 169 Indians, 53 Britons, 7 Portuguese, and 1 Canadian aboard. Our efforts now are focused entirely on the needs of all those affected, their families, and loved ones, the airline said. The first crash of a Boeing 787. This is the first crash of a Boeing 787 Dreamliner, according to the Aviation Safety Network database. Boeing said it was working to gather more information. India's aviation regulatory body said the aircraft gave a mayday call signaling an emergency, but then did not respond to the calls made by the airport traffic control. Aviation consultant John M. Cox, the CEO of Safety Operating Systems, told the AP from Los Angeles that while the first images of the crash were poor, it appeared the aircraft had its nose up and was not climbing, which is one of the things that investigators would look at. The 787 has very extensive flight data monitoring. The parameters on the flight data recorder are in the thousands. So once we get that recorder, they'll be able to know pretty quickly what happened, he said. In U.S. Congress, Republicans revive push for sales of public lands. Story by Nicole Blanchard, The Idaho Statesman, TNS. Congressional Republicans have revived plans to sell public lands as part of ongoing negotiations on the federal budget reconciliation bill. A draft released Wednesday by the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee detailed plans for mandatory disposal of Bureau of Land Management and U.S. Forest Service land for housing. It lists several states where disposal would be eligible: Idaho, Alaska, Arizona, California, Colorado, Nevada, New Mexico, Oregon, Utah, Washington, and Wyoming. If approved, the legislation would require agency officials to publish a list every 60 days of tracts of land that have been nominated or considered for disposal. The legislation caps the amount of land that can be sold at 0.75% of each agency's estate, the committee said. Up to 1.8 million acres of BLM land and up to 1.4 million acres of Forest Service land. The legislation stipulates that any land sold must be used for housing or to address associated community needs. U.S. Senator Mike Lee, Republican of Utah, who chairs the Energy Committee, touted the legislation as an opportunity to make housing more affordable for hardworking American families in a committee news release. The document addressing frequently asked questions claimed the project would develop millions of single-family homes, resulting in greater housing supply and making housing more affordable. Lee has a history of fighting to wrest public land from federal control. He was involved when Utah officials sued the U.S. last year in a case the Supreme Court declined to hear. Moving over to some local stories. Pandemonium Donuts, done after a dozen years. Couple shutting down their champagne business, including food truck, to spend more time with kids. Story by Jana Wiersema. Out of Champagne. Several years ago, James Kyung set his mind to a culinary task for a very simple reason. He had a sweet tooth. We had zero intention of starting a business, he said. It was just merely out of, primarily, me being obsessed with donuts and wanting to learn how to make them just so I could eat donuts at home. That was really the only reason I started making donuts. In time, however, that household hobby did turn into a business now set to shut its doors in a few weeks. Pandemonium Donuts announced its upcoming closure on social media. While their last day of business has yet to be determined, Kyung and his wife, Marcy, estimated they will close sometime around the end of June or early July. The couple have made this decision in order to spend time with their children. One is 4.5 years old, while the other is 5 months old. Trying to do the pandemonium stuff and grow the business takes time away from being at home, Kyung said. The business started small, with the couple initially selling donuts at Urbana's Market in the Square in 2013. Kyung named the endeavor after his nickname of Panda. Then, with help from a crowdfunding campaign, they opened a Pandemonium Donuts food truck in late 2014. A brick-and-mortar location at 1105 Windsor Road followed 3 years later. The business is one of several donut shops to pop up in the Champaign-Urbana area. Others include Industrial Donut, Ye Old Donut Shop, 6 Dunkin' locations, and a Parlor Donuts that opened at the Old Farm Shops in late 2024. Pandemonium's shop and the food truck are both set to close. Kyung added that he and his wife do not plan to sell the business. We don't want to sell the trademark or the recipes or anything like that, he said, because in a sense, I think we always viewed the business as our first child. There's also the slight chance that they might one day start Pandemonium up again, though he admitted that this probably won't happen. Even if we wanted to, it wouldn't be for a while, he said. Kyung added that the Pandemonium wouldn't exist without the community's constant support, and it's been very surreal to see how many people have reached out since their announcement. All in all, it's a bittersweet time, he said. It was very hard to come to that decision, because Pandemonium is us, and saying goodbye to it feels like it's saying goodbye to a big part of who we are, Kyung said. But at the same time, we're excited at the prospect of being able to be home more with our kids and our family, and honestly having free time. As a small business owner, having free time is a rarity, and one of the things we joked about is we haven't had a weekend free in 12 years plus. And then there's some pictures of the various Pandemonium Donuts offerings. Rainbow Sprinkles, Serial Killer, Original Glazed, Blueberry Lemon. And then for another story, we have Ananda Lewis, 1973 to 2025. Former MTV BET host who publicly shared breast cancer journey dies at age 52. Story out of Los Angeles and the AP. Ananda Lewis, the former MTV and BET host who became a beloved television personality in the 1990s with her warmth and authenticity, has died. She was 52. Her sister, Lakshmi Emery, confirmed Lewis's death in a Facebook post Wednesday. Lewis had been battling breast cancer. She's free and in his heavenly arms, Emery wrote. Lord, rest her soul. Lewis, a San Diego native, made a name for herself as a host on BET's Teen Summit, which tackled issues facing Black youth and featured community leaders, entertainers, and politicians. She landed big interviews with Kobe Bryant, Tupac Shakur and Louis Farrakhan, and then First Lady Hillary Clinton, which earned her an NAACP Image Award. After a few seasons, Lewis took her talents over to MTV in 1997. She was a host and VJ on MTV Live, Hot Zone, and Total Request Live, a daily top 10 video countdown show. Lewis told the Associated Press that she felt some backlash after moving from BET to MTV. "I wouldn't say in a strong way, because I think most people who are in my fan base at Teen Summit understand that growth is necessary," she said. "One of the main things we dealt with on a consistent basis, like the underlying theme of all the shows, is you've got to get out there and live your life. The bottom line is, this is about you. So how do you want to grow, and whom do you want to develop into? My justification is that I say to kids, be your best and take advantage of every opportunity. So I couldn't sit in a place of not taking advantage of an opportunity." In 2001, Lewis told AP she wasn't trying to reinvent daytime talk with her new syndicated series, The Ananda Lewis Show. "There's only so much different you can do in daytime, which is what I'm learning. There's a certain way, I guess, people are used to doing things, and that way's not going to change for a while," she said. "I think there's a formula, and some cases have proven that formula works. So the objective isn't to reinvent the wheel, but to make it spin a little more smoothly." Lewis's show lasted only one season, but a few years later, she became a correspondent for The Insider, a spinoff of Entertainment Tonight. Just fitting in a couple of short snippets from area history. In 1925, a mini tornado struck the Twin Cities with violence last night, uprooting trees, frightening inhabitants, and causing slight damage to electric telephone and light wires. On this date in 1975, the Vermilion County Conservation League has called for the removal from office of the entire Vermilion County Conservation Board District Board of Trustees, charging that all five board members have failed to file economic interest statements for 1975, as required by the Illinois Ethics Act. The league also charges some of the board members are directly involved in land holdings in the Middle Fork Reservoir Project area. On this date in 2010, Christine Adrian of Champaign Jefferson Middle School was named Illinois History Teacher of the Year. She was chosen from 35 candidates. Educators from the Illinois State Board of Education reviewed the applications and chose Adrian. In international history, today's highlight, on June 13, 1971, the New York Times began publishing excerpts of the Pentagon Papers, a top-secret study of America's involvement in Vietnam since 1945 that had been leaked to the paper by military analyst Daniel Ellsberg. Also on this date in 1942, during World War II, a four-man Nazi sabotage team arrived by submarine on Long Island, New York, 3 days before a second four-man team landed in Florida. All eight men were arrested within weeks, after two members of the first group defected. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of your News Gazette, dated Friday, June 13th, 2025. Stay tuned.